What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and talking mixed martial arts. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
We're coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. This is episode number 92, and today we are going to be discussing the UFC, Derek Lewis, and the rest of the heavyweight division, which sees a lot of action both this past weekend, and also as we look ahead to the next UFC fight night headlined by Rozenstruik versus Gane. We're going to be discussing the Bellator rankings that were announced shortly after our call for them just last week, and finally we are also going to be discussing boxing. With Oscar Valdez's excellent showing this past weekend, the return of Adrian Broner, and Canelo Alvarez's next fight, and more. Before we get into all of that, grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get started with our weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
Whew. This week, Paul.
I'm smoking.
We got two different kinds of flower. You are sparking up some Do-Si-Do right now, which is an indica hybrid. It's a cross of OG Kush Breath, or OGKB, and Face Off OG. OG Kush Breath is a phenotype of Girl Scout cookies, which is once again making its way into what we're smoking.
We also got some, all over the place.
We got some super glue this week as well, which is Afghani crossed with Northern Lights. And in the packs three today, we are smoking on some Skittles Live Resin. So whatever you're smoking on, let us know in the comment section below. I'm going to hit this pipe right here with this Do-Si-Do. You like my rhyme scheme there?
Yep.
Yeah, it was pretty sick.
It's pretty nice, you know, fucking.
I got rap skills, bro.
I can tell, dude. I can tell just based off that.
Yeah, a lot of people have been asking me to do an all rap podcast, but I just don't want to show everybody up. So. Oh, that's pretty tasty. We dumped a bunch of keef on all this weed as well. Even my keef collection inside my grinder is getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just forgot to take it out like the past 3 months.
I actually fucked up. I wasn't supposed to touch it till 420, but I always end up doing it anyway, so it's whatever.
I like taking it, mixing it into my joints. I was going to roll this up a joint before the show, and I just got lazy.
Well, shit happens.
We ran out of cones. I mean, I'd actually have to roll a joint.
Yeah,
and I
fuck.
Was like,
That's cool.
Damn raw cones have made me lazy, bro. I'm going to hit this bong. We got the super glue in this one. Do-Si-Do there. Fire up that PAX if you want.
Yep.
We saw a lot of action when it comes to combat sports. Pause.
A lot of knockouts.
Lots of heavyweights in the mix this past weekend. Coming up in the next fights. Heavyweight title next month is going to get defended, so all these kind of have some consequence.
Uh-huh.
What did you think of them knockouts last week with Derek Lewis?
Dude, Derek Lewis's knockout was one of the, it's going to be up for knockout of the year.
It was him versus Curtis Blaydes.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, man, I did not realize the odds on Lewis were plus 350.
Yeah,
I was a little bit soured on betting fights because I lost big on Gilbert Burns.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I was still stinging.
You were tired for a week?
So I didn't even check the line. I mean, I would always bet Derek Lewis if he's plus 350.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me? And then, of course, he comes through with the KO in the second round. I've heard some ridiculous talk online referring to this as a lucky punch. Couldn't be further from the truth. In the first round, you saw Curtis Blaydes do some feints on a takedown,
yeah.
And right away, you saw Lewis rear up with that uppercut, feint and an uppercut. You knew he was looking for that as they were coming in.
Yeah.
And in the second round, you know, after a pretty decent stand-up first round, you had Blaydes come in with a really telegraphed takedown. I mean, I'm sorry, it was pretty telegraphed, and there was nothing lucky about it. Derek Lewis was waiting for that. He timed the punch perfectly, and he laid him out cold.
Yeah, he talked about how he had... He had practiced that in camp leading up.
The uppercut?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's when you've got the power that Derek Lewis has, that's a very potent weapon against incoming takedowns.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I thought it was kind of a weird game plan by Curtis Blaydes going in. Like, I didn't really understand why he was so willing to stand in front of him for the first round. And ultimately, his biggest weapon was used as his biggest, you know, undoing.
I wonder if he saw that uppercut coming when he first was thinking about takedowns and figured he didn't want to risk it.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, until maybe he thought he had some better openings in the second round. But again, it was really telegraphed.
Yeah, it was a real telegraphed takedown, though. I don't know. But still. And then, of course, Derek follows up with some freaking smash, freaking, like, some crazy ground and pound punches after he was out cold, too.
Yeah, he gets a couple solid blows.
It was pretty nasty.
I saw some, excuse me, but some fucking little weenies crying about that, too. I mean, I'm sorry. That's his job. That's what you're supposed to do.
It's the same thing as, like, when Masvidal did that to Askren or anybody who knocks somebody out and follows to the ground. You keep going until the ref, you know.
Because
what happens when Derek Lewis does that, hits him twice, wakes him up, and then he just goes muscle memory and just starts, obviously not in that situation, it was so devastating, that would never happen. But you know what I'm saying. Like, there's been plenty of fights in the UFC where guys have, you know, pulled back a bit when they go to the ground, and the ref tends to stand by and not, you know.
No, he didn't do anything wrong. He did what he was supposed to do as a fighter. Exactly. It was Herb Dean's job. That was the ref to get in there and stop it.
Yeah.
He wasn't being unnecessary or anything, I thought. So, get over it. He's a killer.
He
owns the knockout record for the heavyweight division, and he's tied the UFC record with Vitor Belfort for all-time knockouts. And this is a dude that still got some fight left in him. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if Derek Lewis is ever going to be champ, but Derek Lewis is going to be around in the heavyweight division for a minute, knocking fools silly.
Claims he wants to welcome John Jones to heavyweight, which I just don't see John taking that fight. It's just not, unless it was a title fight, of course.
Yeah, I could see them fighting if Derek earns a title shot and John is champ, but I don't know why John Jones would take that fight beforehand. He's going to walk right into a title shot. Curtis Blaydes now knocked out twice every time he's fought a big puncher now. All heavyweights are big punchers, but... Well, he's lost twice to Ngannou,
twice
and now
Ngannou
to Derek Lewis. Same way.
Yeah.
Tough out. He had, what, 5 wins in a row prior to that?
Yeah.
Sends him right back down to the bottom. It leaves Derek Lewis with 4 straight wins in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, that's why I don't think it really does send him back to the bottom. I think it sends him back to, like, where he just stays where he was at. I'd say he's, like, second in the division still.
Well, like, heavyweight's weird because we've got the next year pretty much mapped out. We're going to have Ngannou versus Stipe later on in March. And then the winner of that is facing John Jones later on in the year.
Yeah.
So...
There's just not very many spots. Yeah, you're right. There's just not very many spots for title shots is basically what you're saying. Which, yeah, it's a division where the guys on the low, unlike the lower spots of the rankings are going to get, you know, are going to have to fight each other because there's so much clarity at the top. There's going to have to be some battles down low that have to happen, or there's going to be maybe even some rematches and shit like that just because, you know, we're running out of guys.
Right. Well, we had other heavyweight action on that card, although it didn't really have title implications. But we did see a former champ with Andrei Arlovsky fighting a strong up-and-comer in Tom Aspinall.
Yeah.
And Aspinall looked great.
Yeah.
I mean, he winds up getting a sub on Arlovsky.
Yeah.
Arlovsky.
And he almost gets the finish in the first, too. There was a flurry of punches where you know, Arlovsky ultimately gets the benefit of the doubt, you know, where it comes to, you know, being in finishing situations, because we've seen so many times over the past where he's been able to take a lot of damage and come back and even win some of those fights, you know.
Yeah, Aspinall had him up against the cage and was teeing off, and every time it looked like it was about to get stopped, Andre threw a hook, stepped out of the way a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But
who would have thought though that he'd be the one to, you know, jump to his back and hit him with a rear naked choke when he's known as a striker?
Yeah, that was a little surprising. Aspinall looks really good, though. His boxing is really crisp.
There was people were saying that he looks like Frank Mir's lost kid.
Yeah, he kind of does look a little bit like Mir.
It was so funny that Frank even went on Twitter after the fight. He was like, good job, son. Or no, he said it like runs in the family or something like that.
What I like about Aspinall is his use of 1-2 combos instead of wild 3-4 hooks.
Yeah.
It's a lot crisper. It's a lot faster. And I think it's just more effective in MMA because we talked about it before on other shows. These guys get swinging with their big hooks. You know, their 3-4 hooks left and right, left, right, left, right.
Yeah.
It's easier to duck and slip out of that. It's a lot harder to dodge those 1-2s up against the cage coming in.
And they're like they're stabbing punches too. Like that's one thing I feel like. I mean, this is kind of off topic, but I feel like that's one thing that Connor is like missing in his arsenal in that last fight. Was like earlier in his career, he was so good at like those straight punches that would just like stab you in the face with the jab or the straight, mm-hmm. where you'd back you up. Maybe even if they weren't hard punches, that's kind of what Aspinall has. You know what I mean? Those punches that like they're not maybe always the hardest punches in the world, but when you're walking in and he meets you in the middle with a jab or a straight, it wakes you up or knocks you on your ass. You know what I mean?
For sure.
And I feel like you were saying, that those are extremely like same thing with Kamaru Usman. Usman did the same thing against Burns. You know, like those are super – they work very well in mixed martial arts because it kind of throws off the other person's timing as well. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Because in mixed martial arts, you're so square and you're so like – especially when we're talking about wrestlers and stuff like that, they're always going to be like head first coming forward at you, that when you meet them in the middle with a jab or a straight, kind of is like – takes their whole game off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, little things like that can make a big difference. Like double jabs, triple jabs. You'll find a lot of fighters in MMA have huge success with that because it's just not seen that much. And 1-2 punches, I think, are. It seems like such a simple thing, but sometimes simple things are really revolutionary.
He made his whole career off of that.
Look at the calf kick that's in vogue right now. I mean, that's a very simple kick that's been there this whole time.
Yeah.
It's not like it's revolutionary, but it's currently revolutionizing fights.
Yeah.
But Aspinall, circling back around to him, I think that kid's legit.
Yeah,
he handled. Look, Andre's a bit over the hill at this point. He's 42. He's
okay.
Yeah,
but that's why he's there, though. That's why he's there. Yeah, he's there to set the precedent for, like, are you ready to really fight the upper echelon of guys? Because if you're able to do what you did to Andre Arlovsky, we've seen plenty of guys who have lost and won against Andre who have gone on to do great things. Look at guys like Rozenstruik, Ngannou. They were maybe on the side of, like, you know, where Andre was a little less weathered. But even now, I mean, like, come on. Like, it's still a win that you can put on your record and really be happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Especially, for him right now, where he's at.
It's a legacy fight almost for a younger guy. You know, it's a rite of passage, right? It seems fucked up to say that, you know, because Andre's a legend. But, like, it's kind of a rite of passage in the heavyweight division that the upper echelon of guys are able to, you know, get rid of Andre and give him trouble, and then they're ready to step up in competition, you know?
They pointed out that Aspinall had his UFC debut literally 20 years after Andre's UFC debut. Think about that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Then they wind up fighting each other. Good fight, though. Quick work for Aspinall, though. Second round. We had a couple other good fights on that card.
Another heavyweight. And Chris Dukakis knockout Alexei Oleinik.
Alexei Oleinik was taking a beating up against the cage. You know, everybody knows what he's going to try to do. He's had, 75 pro fights?
Ezekiel jokes.
Yeah, he's be looking for that Ezekiel. He's going to take it to the ground.
Yeah.
And he never got a chance to really get anything going.
Yep.
He was getting teed off on up against the fence. I don't know. Not a lot to say. I mean,
it was good. Performance though for Chris.
It's a good performance for him.
I mean, that could be possibly the next fight.
Oleinik looked ancient in there. I just got to say, he looked like a gray-haired old man, and he got his ass beat kind of like an old man.
Yeah.
But then you think that about him, and his next fight will go out and sub somebody really fast.
That's what happens. That's his whole career. His whole career is based off, like, remember, I think it was when he fought Werdum not too long ago, 3 or 4 fights ago. Yeah, I was on like a 6-fight win streak.
Mm-hmm.
And it beat like Mark Hunt, and beat like a lot of good guys. And he just like, that's the thing is like, I don't see any reason for Oleinik to really step away from the game because he's so skilled. Like that's what always like when you look at across pro sports is like the guys who last the longest are the skilled like fighters. Like when they don't have to really use a lot of their physical ability to like overwhelm you. Like, I don't really think Alexei really needs to use a lot of his like grunt and like
his athletic
strength,
attributes,
yeah,
don't really
to finish
need to come
people.
Into effect.
No, like he's so skilled on the ground that like this fight, yeah, it sucks that he lost. And I think Chris is an up and coming heavyweight as well, like on Aspinall's level, where those two guys could be the future of this division. You know what I mean? And that's not bad loss for Alexei. He could come back and win fucking 4 more in a row, and we'll be talking a few weeks from now, him fighting somebody, or a few months from now, him fighting somebody who's ranked again.
Well, I think the UFC would be wise not to match those two up yet.
Think so? Think it's too early?
The division is old.
Let them kill the old.
New blood. Kill off the old guys before you kill off each other.
True.
Because, I mean, we're still talking about, you know, Lewis won, and who's he calling out? He knows he's not getting a title shot. He's calling out Alistair Overeem.
Who's off? Just came off a fucking knockout loss.
Right, who just got beat.
He said some funny, funny shit.
At least now we know why Houston is going through, and Texas in general, all of that snow. I mean, Derek was kind enough to share with us.
He said it's because his hot balls were in Vegas all week.
It makes sense.
It makes sense.
No, that guy's a treasure with his post-fight comments. I wish he could be champ, but he won't.
I mean, it's possible. He's been just right there before. He fought DC for the title. I mean, let's just be honest. If Ngannou goes out there and loses, and then Lewis goes on and maybe beats Alistair, or I don't know, rematches Volkov or something like that, wins another fight, John and Stipe fight, you really think they're going to run that back right away if John were to beat Stipe pretty bad?
No, I think Stipe is likely to retire. Exactly. Yeah.
So then we move on. Like, this is why, like we talked about, how the heavyweight division is kind of mapped out for the next year. That's why I feel like Derek Lewis is in a perfect spot right now. Because he's on a win streak, nothing that like people aren't roaring like, oh, he needs a title shot immediately.
No.
But if he wins one more fight, how do you really deny him at that point? You know, so him taking some time, maybe winning another fight and getting in better shape and, you know, doing all the shit he does between fights, maybe he's for the best. And then maybe down the line, maybe the start of next year, he does get a title shot against the winner of John and Stipe or Ngannou and John or however that plays out.
It'd be pretty interesting, but... As far as the rest of the UFC fight night this past weekend, was it number 20?
19?
I lose count. But it was a decent card overall.
Yeah.
A lot of finishes, but nothing else really stood out to me on the card.
Yeah.
We do have an interesting heavyweight matchup here next week. Might as well just bridge right into that while we're discussing the heavyweight division. We've got Rozenstruik versus Cyril Gane.
Yep. Which is kind of what we were talking about earlier. It's kind of one of those young killing the young kind of fights. Cause
a little bit.
These two guys are... but I guess this is kind of not as big because they're the elite of the elite at this point.
And Rozenstruik's taken a loss here recently, didn't he?
He did, but then he came back and won since then.
I mean, he did beat Overeem. He was getting worked in the Overeem fight. I mean, he won there at the last minute, which that's all it takes, but he didn't look good up to that point.
Yeah. Well, then, of course, he got stomped out by Ngannou.
Then Ngannou made short work.
Yeah. But still, that Cyril
Gane looked really good in his last fight against JDS.
Yeah, super good.
JDS still upset about the supposed blows to the back of his head, which
didn't. It was close, but it was like precise as fuck. Kind of like you know what I mean.
I don't think Gane did anything wrong.
It
I
was
like,
to the ref's discretion. If the ref said that it was clean, it was clean. There's no reason to file a fucking review from the commission. On a like call like that, you're never gonna win that.
Well, with the next week's heavyweight matchup, I'll tell you straight out, I'm not a believer in Rozenstruik. I don't think he's gonna beat Cyril Gane. I think Cyril Gane's gonna work him over pretty good.
Think so?
What I've seen from Rozenstruik in the past is just he's got good hands. He's got heavy hands.
Yeah.
And we know he comes from kickboxing, I believe, right?
Yeah.
He was a well accomplished kickboxer there, but I don't think he's got what it takes to beat Cyril Gane after what he did to JDS and looking the way Overeem was working over. Rozenstruik prior to the loss. I just don't see it happening. Now, he can prove me wrong. It's a heavyweight division, but I don't think he's it. I think he's going to get beat pretty handily.
Was that JDS fight, was that two rounds or one? I think it was two, right?
I believe it was two.
Was it
might
two?
Have been one.
Okay. I just want to say
JDS was horrible in that fight, though.
Yeah, I just want to know because I really haven't, like, because of, you know, fallouts and shit like that, I think this is only, like, Cyril's fifth fight or fourth fight in the UFC. So, like, I just haven't really seen, like, a ton about him. And I haven't really seen him take, like, punches from a guy who hits, like, Rozenstruik. You know what I mean?
I mean Junior Dos Santos hits pretty dang
does
hard.
Does he now, though?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, your power is the last thing to go.
Yeah, but I'm saying, do you think his power is on the same level as it was a few years ago? I still think he carries power. I just don't think it's to the level of someone like a Rozenstruik who's kind of more in his prime and compared to a guy like freaking JDS who's taking L's. Was he lost four?
It was round two. 2 minutes. Round two. Okay. Yeah, JDS is coming off four straight TKOs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ngannou, then Blades, then Rozenstruik, then Cyril Gane.
Yeah. Okay, so that was Rozenstruik's first win since the Ngannou fight, I think. Let's check that real quick. Just because I don't want to discredit him, but
Rozenstruik, he's 12-1.
Yeah.
And he is coming off of a win over Junior Dos Santos. Okay. Prior to that, the loss to Ngannou.
So, yeah, it does make a lot of sense. So, both these guys coming off wins against JDS, match them up.
Then, I mean, not to discredit Rozenstruik, but this is what I mean. If you look at his UFC, I mean, okay, he beat Junior Albani. All right, I'm not, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm
remember
not a
that
fan.
One punch
he beat Alan Crowder.
That Crowder punch was stupid, though. He hit Crowder with a jab and fucking slept him.
He KO'd Andre Arlovsky. Yep. And then he had the comeback win against Overeem at the last minute.
Yeah.
And then Ngannou wasted him in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And then he's got the JDS win.
Well, see, that's not his fault, though. It's kind of the UFC's division's fault. Like, he's fighting the guys up the ladder. It's not like he's just, like, getting crazy, like, comeuppance from, like, the guys at the top. You know, it's not like Dana's like, oh, I love Rozenstruik. He should get a title shot. Like, I just feel like he's more or less just fought who's in front of him and had good performances.
And Cyril Gane, I mean, he's young. He's 7-0 after the Dos Santos win. He's got a win over Tanner Bowser before that, which is a decision. There was nothing real special about that.
Uh-huh.
And then his prior two wins, they're UFC wins, but they're against people I've never heard of. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like
Dante Omeyes and Rafael Pessoa.
Yeah,
I mean, he subbed both those guys, one of the heel hook, one of the arm triangle. But that's what you'd expect. I mean, he came into the UFC when he was 3-0, so they're not going to match him up against.
Yeah. You know. Well, I mean, now he is, though. Now he's fighting. He's
handled JDS. Like,
that's the thing is, how do you really rank that win, though, with three losses? That was his fourth loss in a row. Coming off three losses, why is JDS even ranked that high in the first place?
Dos Santos looked awful in that fight. Yeah. I mean, he looked like he had no business in the ring to me.
Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think Dos Santos going into that fight was, like, ranked 9th or some shit. Like, how the fuck is that even possible? Like,
heavyweight division, man.
Like, that just doesn't make any
sense.
And
the UFC rankings are a joke. But
they are. And so, like, that's why I wonder, that's where, like, I'm kind of torn with this fight. Because I like what I've seen from Cyril so far. But I also like what I've seen from Rozenstruik a lot as well. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think it'll be over quick either way. I'm expecting 2 rounds. And that's
think so?
It. Yep. Absolutely.
You're taking Gon?
I am taking Cyril Gon, Cyril Gane, however you say it.
Gon. Yeah, I'll go with him as well.
How about the co-main? We've got Krylov making his comeback. Or not comeback, but his return, I should say.
Against Makhmed and Krylov. I'm sorry, I'm not very good at
speaking. Nikolai Krylov is I like him.
Yeah.
He's a solid fighter.
I mean, he's ranked 8th in light heavyweight division, which is kind of going through, like, this is one of those fights where I feel like if either of these guys puts on, like, a impressive performance, it could really make some noise. Because, you know, with Izzy moving up to fight light heavyweight for the title and shit, however that turns out, and then, like, you kind of have Glover waiting in the wings, like, these guys ranked 8th and 11th in the division, like, this is where a guy makes a big step, you know, or a big jump in competition. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, these two guys are, I kind of don't even like these two guys fighting each other because of, like, they're the younger blood in the division. You know what I mean? I'd almost want to see, you know, them fight someone higher up. But at the same time, this is going to be a great fight, I think.
It should be a good fight. I'm interested to see what happens after Izzy fights Jan. I mean, if Izzy wins, I don't think he's going to try to do the double champ thing. I don't think the UFC wants any more of that.
Think he'll just move up to light heavyweight forever?
I think so, yeah. I just don't see him holding both titles. Because that never works.
I mean, Amanda Nunes, it works.
Yeah, but one division isn't really a division. That's the only reason why.
I tried with that one. I tried with that
you
one.
Tried. I'm tried. Even having it. So, these young guys, I don't know, but the last thing that the UFC needs is their heavyweight division kind of stalled out with just two fights occupying the whole year. Then what, going to do that to the light heavies as well?
Yeah,
because Glover has certainly earned his title shot, but it ain't happening anytime soon.
No.
Unless they at least put an interim in. If Izzy
wins, I think he is. I think Glover. I think Glover is showing up as a
as an alternate.
Yeah,
for the light heavy fight.
Yeah,
That's interesting. Well, either way, what else have we got on this card next week? Moving away from the bigger guys,
the rescheduling of Pedro Munhoz and Jimmy Rivera.
Some bantam weights.
Yeah, Jimmy's corner, I think, had the vid a couple weeks ago. They had to do some last-minute shit. But, yeah. So
this is what, the second or third time it's been
rescheduled? I believe the second. Maybe the third. Who knows? But this is a pretty good fight. I think this is a good chance for either one of these guys to really, like, stake their claim as, like, they're not done. They're still, like, to make their second run.
Yeah,
you know
Jimmy
I mean?
Rivera had so much hype. I mean, he was going to 19-0 at one point, and then it's just been...
I think he's lost, like, three of his last five or something.
Yeah. Whereas Munhoz, I'm a believer in Pedro Munhoz. I think he'll get
the job
done.
Well, you thought he won his last fight against Frankie.
I did.
And then he had that knockout of Garbrandt before that. So, I mean, he's had some good wins. The question is, can he continue to... Like, I think his biggest problem in that Frankie fight was he just wasn't able to put Frankie away. You know, I feel like a lot in his career he's been able to put people away. And if you can, if you're able to stand and trade with him, he has trouble. So I think it's going to be, like, it's going to come down to if Jimmy can take Pedro's shots ultimately. Because I think Munhoz has the power to put Jimmy Rivera away.
He definitely does. I think he has the power. I don't know if he'll, I think he's probably looking at a decision in this fight, but I'm liking Pedro.
I'm taking Pedro by knockout.
Are you?
Yeah.
Jimmy Rivera is good, but I don't think he's going to be in the UFC much longer. I get the Thomas Almeida vibe from him.
Do you?
Just like, meaning like a guy who had just a ton of hype, but then when he started getting some tougher competition, he wilted pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see if I'm right.
And then we got Angela Hill stepping up on short notice, taking on Ashley Yoder.
This is what, her 10th fight in the past 2 months, I believe, Angela Hill. Oh, she's stepping up left and right. Man.
Yeah.
She is the woman to turn to when there's a short notice need, and she's all over it.
Yep.
I
like her in this fight.
Dude, she's a brawler. She's tough. Ashley Yoder, she's solid, but Angela Hill, I think
like
all this
evolved.
Work she's been putting in, it's paying off. She is evolving. She's tough. Tough. I think she'll make short work of Ashley Yoder. Although that's a pretty good
short
matchup.
Work?
Yeah, I like Angela Hill. She needs to come in and make a statement. She had she lost kind of a controversial decision in her last fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, she lost to...
I remember thinking,
leaving
that fight, thinking that she had won.
It's Claudia Gadelha. That's who she lost to.
Yes.
It was a real close decision. I thought she won as well. And a lot of the people on the... commentary team thought she won as well, but it was a close fight.
Well, I think she's gonna get right back on the winning track here.
I do too. And then at the bottom of the in the prelims, it's the bottom of the main card. Sorry, we got Alex Caceres taking on Kevin Kroom. If you don't know Kroom's story, it's pretty interesting. He's a 33-year-old fighter who's got 33 fights in his career as well. He was called on short notice. Like, I think it was like 10 days notice to fight Roosevelt Roberts. He goes in there, subs Roberts in 31 seconds.
And when was this?
I believe it was a couple months back.
31 seconds.
Yep. Whew. And, like, you know, those are the kind of stories you love to hear. You know, like the guy who's, you know, just been grinding it out. Like... his whole pro career, and then, like, never really got to the big show, but, like, when he gets on that stage, is able to pull something off like that.
Makes the most of his short notice opportunity, gets the big upset, the big sub win.
Yeah.
Makes some short work. And now a fight against Bruce Leroy, who is one of my favorite fighters on the roster. He has been since his Ultimate Fighter days for me. A guy that's never really made it, you know, to the top of the heap, but you can always count on for really solid, entertaining fights.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of skill.
coming off a win against Chase Hooper.
coming off a win against Chase Hooper.
Oh, sorry.
He's a guy I'll tune in anytime Bruce Leroy's fighting. He's a good dude. He's got good energy about him. He's got a lot of stand-up skill.
Yeah.
And he's got some skill on the ground, too. I don't know how he's going to do here. This one's a coin flip for me. I'd like to see Alex just because I've been rooting for him for so long. But
yeah.
Like you said, when somebody of what's his opponent's name again?
Kevin Crew.
See, I'm not even familiar.
Exactly. Well, not a lot of people know him at all. I mean, he's a freaking overnight, you know, kind of scenario.
I like seeing guys like that come in and make a statement too. So either way, I'm just hoping for a good fight there.
Yeah.
But all in all, next week's Fight Night in Vegas does look like an entertaining card.
Yep.
Which is good because we've had some bleh lately from the UFC.
Well, then there's also that Thiago Moises and Alex Hernandez fight on there as well, which is also another good fight.
That is solid.
But yeah, so up and down, though, that card
We did have Randy Brown fighting, too. Unfortunately, that fell out here. Well, hopefully that gets rescheduled.
Yeah, I like that fight, actually, a lot. So, we'll see. Well, we also had some boxing over the weekend.
We did some pretty entertaining boxing.
Yeah. We had Oscar Valdez fucking shock the world in all of Mexico. You know, we got, he was 10th round knockout over Miguel Burchelt.
And he was doing work.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it was one of those fights that it was kind of
the first like 6-7 rounds. Yeah. And Burchelt got like 2 rounds. He came back a little bit and then that was it. The left hook was just there for Oscar Valdez all day.
You know, Burchelt's biggest problem was he's one of those guys who was willing to catch one, come in, and you know, he throws a lot of combos. And I felt like that was his biggest problem was every time he stepped in, he let Valdez hit him with the big hooks, and then he'd eat those hooks and try to throw his own, and Valdez would just get out of there before he would, you know, was able to get in and actually land.
Yeah, they could have actually stopped this. The corner could have stopped this fight prior to the knockout. I think they should have, too, because we were discussing it as it was happening.
Well, you got to think also in this
scenario. Valdez is just punishing him.
Well, not only that, you got to think in this scenario with Burchell being the fucking champion, there's probably some kind of rematch clause in the contract. So if you're going into the 10th round, you've been knocked down twice and you're on wobbly legs.
And getting worked. He was getting punished.
Why not throw the towel, go back to the tool shed, we'll figure it out, we'll get our rematch or however that works out. But when you get devastatingly knocked out like that, fuck your rematch clause.
And instead they let him go. Worked, absolutely. You know? They let him keep fighting. They talked about it in the corner. I heard him.
Yeah.
And they let him keep fighting, and then it was like he was slept. I mean, he was coming in, he ate this hook right as he was moving forward. It's perfectly timed.
He was out for a minute, too. He was sleep.
Yeah, he felt like a tree.
Yeah, that shit was rough.
So, you know, what can you say? I both love and hate knockouts like that.
Yeah.
You know, as
they're,
I get
they're
older,
they're great
I
to
feel,
watch, but like, after you've seen so many and you know what happens after, it's like,
I mean, you start seeing fighters that have taken too many blows as they get older, and it's hard to be super excited when you see someone get slept like that when they were talking about stopping the fight beforehand.
Yeah. Well, and one thing I do want to point out as well is, I forget who was on the broadcast team. I think it was Bradley, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but he was talking about how Burchell was ranked 92nd out of 130 WBC boxers in defense. And it's like, they call him the Terminator because he just goes in there and fucking, you know, he just eats everything and throws back. And it's not like he was super like that was a fight where people were going in saying like, oh, this is going to be so close. Valdez is like a young up and coming, prospect right now. And a lot of people thought he was going to get the upset, but in the sports book, that was not what they were thinking at all. You know, with the record, I think it was 6 KOs in his last, 7-0 in title fights for Burchelt. And it's like, when you have those kind of numbers and you're able to eat everything and still come forward and get the knockout wins, it's just that style can't last forever. You know what I mean?
No, it can't. The Terminator doesn't make it through.
Yeah.
Especially in boxing.
Yeah.
So he got slept. Now we've got, it's a junior lightweight, it's 130 pounds. We've got Valdez taking over there.
That was weird. They kept saying super featherweight and junior lightweight.
I noticed that during the broadcast.
Right?
Either way,
right?
They kept 130 saying. Pounds.
I was
right.
Like, what the fuck are you guys saying?
And now they're talking about, Bob Arum is talking about next for Valdez being Stevenson, Shakur Stevenson, yeah.
That'd be a good fight.
Yeah, possibly the biggest fight according to Arum after Fury and Joshua.
I don't know about that, but it's
I don't
a good
know either.
Fight.
But it'd be It would be something pretty exciting to see. So we'll, you know, it's a lot of talk, but we'll see if that comes next. I'm certainly not going to complain.
Well, yeah, I mean, Stevenson is, I think, is probably the best. Whatever, if you want to call him junior lightweights or super featherweights in the world right now, I think he's the best. I think he's just kind of one of those guys who's just a little bit better than everyone else. You know what I mean? Like, I think Valdez is tough, and he's like, but if you watch in that fight, he throws a lot. Like, I don't know if that's how he always fights, because I've only seen a hand. Like, I watched some of his highlights before the fight and then obviously the fight. But it just seems like if he wants to, like, walk you down and hit you with, like, really, real hard shots. I just don't think he's going to be able to do that against Stevenson. Like, Stevenson's too polished to, like, get walked down like that and hit with those kind of shots like Burchell was. His defense is so much better. It's not going to be the same fight.
No,
that's
it wouldn't
where
be
I
the
just
same
don't,
fight at all.
I don't see the path of victory for Valdez.
Now, Burchell might get a rematch as well. They're going to be speaking about that. One thing that I do find interesting is Bob Arum is already talking about the possibility of holding either one of those two fights here in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium, though.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that's where the easiest way would be to social distance if you're and get the most crowd possible. That's the thing, is like a lot of these boxing matches are going for football stadiums because you can really spread people out, and you also can get fucking,
right, you can get your arena-sized crowd, your 15,000, your 18,000 people into a football stadium while adequately social distancing everybody. Whereas if you're holding it in, you know, like in an actual stadium, you're looking at 2,000-3,000 people max.
They were saying on the broadcast that it was the last fight in the bubble. So
at MGM?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens next. But that was some pretty exciting action. That was a great fight. We had several other.
Over at Mohegan Sun in freaking, what is that, Connecticut?
Yes, the Mohegan in Connecticut.
We had a couple of good fights over there. We had Otto Wallin defeating Dominic Brazil, and just a fight where he was just outclassed Brazil for the whole time.
He sure did. I haven't seen him fight since his big match against Fury, where he cut Fury's eye open, and there was a little bit of a scare there for a minute, although Fury winds up pulling away and obviously winning that fight.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen Wallin fight since.
I think he picked up a knockout victory shortly after, but, I mean.
Well, he looked pretty good against Dominic.
Yeah. That's the thing, is like.
A whole class above him, really.
Well, that's surprised. Like, where do you think this puts him in the division? Like, you think he's a top five heavyweight right now? Like, you think
he just might be. This might put him up there with, like, Andy Ruiz level, in the division rankings.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, because it's like Brazil's tough, but like he just looked outclassed in every like exchange. It was like Otto was able to hit him with like three or four punches, and Brazil would just be like just a step behind him. Like every single exchange, he was just behind him, and he was getting his ass beat. He was really just beating him up, and so ultimately he gets There was a unanimous decision. It was 117, 111, 118, 110, and 116 and 112.
This brings Wallin to 22-1, 14 KOs, with that only loss being to Tyson Fury, a decision loss to Fury.
Yeah.
That's looking better, with time.
Absolutely.
Whereas Brazil falls to, this was his third loss, so.
Yep. This was his first fight, I believe, 18 months since that loss to fucking Deontay Wilder, which is
and Brazil just couldn't handle the left hands.
Yeah.
So,
well, he was setting it up.
Wallin was
so
much faster.
Yeah, way faster. And that's the thing, is like, that's what I mean. Like, he was just a step behind. It was like every time, like, Wallin set him up perfect. Like, he'd hit him with the right, and it would freaking Brazil would be so worried about the right, he was able to hit him with freaking crazy hooks, and he was beating the shit out of his body too.
Yeah. His body, and then his eyes started closing too.
He was I believe, going into the eighth, his left or his right eye? I can't remember which one, but it was like damn near shut.
It was his left eye.
Left
from
eye,
that,
okay.
Or
yeah.
His right eye, coming from that left hook, I believe.
Yeah.
Either way, good showing for Wallin.
Yep.
Wallin. How do you say it right?
I don't know. it seems like either one. I'll go with Otto.
Let's go with Otto. Well, We had Adrian Broner actually coming back.
Yep.
Gets a win, a rather underwhelming win.
Yeah.
It was against Jovany Santiago.
Yeah, it was Johnny. A classic Adrian Broner fight, you know. Comes out super defense heavy for the first 5 or 6 rounds. Turns it up in the 7th, probably wins. I thought he won probably 6 or 7 through 11 and lost 12. So
there's a lot of controversy with the officiating.
The official was an asshole, dude. He was like stopping the fight in between, like, to tell Broner to stop talking shit. Like, is that, last time I checked, that is not illegal. Like, I don't know what, like, you know what I mean? I don't know
the
what
way
the
he
fuck
was breaking him up
was.
Is keeping Santiago from, you know, being able to fight on the inside.
Santiago's
well.
Fighting a little dirty though. I'm to be honest, he hit Broner with probably like 5 or 6 to the back of the head, and he got warned like 3 times. Like, it was weird. It was like he kept getting away with those, like, in the back of the head, and then he also freaking hit Broner like 5 seconds after the bell, after round 5. It was rough.
Now, Santiago wound up getting a point taken away in, what, the 5th round, I believe, after a series of just infractions,
like,
leading up through then between both guys. I mean, both guys landed punches after the bell.
Well, it was weird, though. So Broner hit him Broner hits him with a jab, and, like, he hit him back with a jab. And then the bell, like, it was like as the bell rang, right? Like, they both hit each other, right? And it was sort of close. But then, like, a couple seconds go by, and then Santiago just leads it up and fucking clocks him after the bell's, like, been rung. And, like, everyone kind of looked away because they thought they were going to break. And the ref's like, what the fuck are you doing? And pushes him into his corner. And it was just, like, so unnecessary. And I feel like it set the whole fight up for the judges to just think he was an asshole. Because, like, I know Adrian Broner didn't pay the judges off because he couldn't afford it. He said before the fight he had $13 in his bank account. So
right. Well, he gets a decision win here.
It was a very strange score.
But the scoring here, I mean, we had it
117-110.
115-112, 116-111, and an absolutely absurd 117-110.
Yeah.
I mean, especially Santiago clearly winning the 12th round.
It was a round-by-round fight, though. Like, if you look at the punch stats, it was, I believe, they both hit 27% of their punches, or 29%, something like that. But it was, I think, 92 to 208 punches for Santiago. But it was really a round-by-round fight, because if you watch in the 12th round, he probably hits him with, like, 65 of those strikes.
Yeah, the 12th, he was,
like, it was,
he definitely woke up.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't even that he woke up. In the 12th, his corner, going into the 12th, his corner goes,
unloaded, I should say.
Yeah, well, going into the 12th, his corner goes, they're going to screw you. You have to knock him out. And then ultimately, that's what happened. Like, he's like, you have to knock him out. You have to knock him out. So, ultimately, it was just a classic Broner fight, though, you know, like, where he looked like high class in those rounds he was willing to open up, but, like, if only he would just open up the whole fight, you know. This is not his weight class either.
Yeah, like you said, it was round by round fight. Bad Left Hook, a site that I frequent quite a lot. I was their scoring had it 114-113, I believe.
Yeah. That's how I had it.
The Showtime poll, Twitter poll had Santiago winning. The commentary Showtime team seemed to think that Santiago.
Everyone kind of had it one round Santiago. That's kind of where I.
The CompuBox stat numbers are a little bit off. Like I said, you've got Broner throwing 98 or landing 98 punches at 207.
Yeah.
But like you just said, in the 12th round, he probably landed 60 of those punches.
So if you really look at it, it was probably going into the. Because Broner only hit him with like 20 punches. It was probably like around 140 to 70, which is still the same thing. It's like double still. You know what I mean?
So, underwhelming win for Broner, but he does pick it up.
He's not going to fight at 47 anymore, though. He's probably going to end up going back to 40.
Who knows?
Well, he said he wants to keep fighting. He said he wants to stay in the gym and out of trouble, were his exact words. He said the more fights he gets, the less trouble he gets in. He said he doesn't want to be in the clubs anymore, doesn't want to do any of that shit. And what people don't realize is Adrian Broner is still not that old. He's younger than Terrence Crawford.
That's surprising when you hear it.
Yeah, like he's, what, 31, I think, something like that?
30, 31.
Yeah, so it's like his prime is not necessarily over, you know what I mean? Like, he's talented. If he would just get with the right camp and get his fucking head back on his shoulders, you know what I mean? He was talking about a former four-time champ, dude. Like, come on. Or, like, was it four weight classes, something like that? Yeah. Was something to that effect. But he had over 300 amateur fights. Like, this guy's – he's boxing has been his whole life. And I just feel like the fame and the money and all the shit that comes with it kind of led him astray. You know what I mean? Which happens a lot.
But, it definitely did that. And that's part of the boxing story.
Oh, yeah, days. For sure. I mean, and we all know about his legal issues, which I won't even go into because that's just is what it is. It's fucked up. And he's the one he'll have to answer for that kind of shit. You know what I mean? And, yeah, I just feel like the more, like he said, though, the more he's in the ring, the less chances for him to get in trouble.
We did have a little bit of heavyweight news coming in as we went to show. Eddie Hearn came out and said that, you know, the WBO has officially ordered the interim bout between Usyk and Joe Joyce.
Joyce, sorry.
And that is actually supposed to be going to purse bid here, according to Eddie Hearn, within the next couple of weeks.
Well, so there we go. That sets that up would clear Fury
everything.
Joshua.
Yeah, that would clear everything out of the way for Fury Joshua.
Yeah, because then also Dillian Whyte and Wilder are fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's the news coming in as we're sitting here right now. And to round out boxing, we've got Canelo Alvarez doing his mandatory title defense here.
Coming up this weekend, yeah.
Coming up this weekend as well. In a fight that, while it could be interesting, most expect him to win fairly handily.
Yeah.
And hopefully set up some unification bouts against Saunders. Well, he's talking about
he wants to do Saunders and then Caleb Plant back-to-back, whichever sequence, whether it be Plant first or Saunders first. He wants to be the unified champ, which is big. Because when we were talking about that weight class, we had fucking champions in every different, whether it be WBC, WBA, right, IBF, all of them were different champions. So now we're getting those fights to happen. I think it's what's best for Canelo's legacy also. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of those guys who I feel like is real legacy-driven. You know what I mean? He wants to leave his stamp on the sport. And
if he were to unify all of the titles, that would be tremendous.
Yeah.
I mean,
so yeah, I like obviously Canelo in this fight. I think Canelo is honestly the number one pound for pound fighter in the world right now. Like,
argue with that.
A lot of people say it's Crawford. A lot of people say, you know, that it's some people even say it's Spence. I don't know. Like, you know, a lot of people give those guys a lot of the
It's credit. Hard to look at Canelo's body of work.
Dude, Canelo has fucking just been in this freaking. He probably has the best record in boxing right now. When you talk about names, like he's beat them all, really, outside of Floyd. Like, literally.
Now, let's circle back into mixed martial arts here to round out the show. Last week, we talked about how, surprisingly, we were talking about Bellator rankings and how they need them. And then out of nowhere,
like literally hours after we recorded,
Bellator came out and announced they're going to put in a ranking system, which we swear we had no prior knowledge of. It was just something that we were discussing on the spur of the moment, really.
Yeah.
And I've been kind of surprised here. I was excited to hear the news. I thought it was great. They released their panel. They released their qualifications to make their, you know, their not their qualifications, but like how many fights you need in Bellator, how active you need to be, et cetera. When they showed the, I believe it was 18 members, either 15 or 18 member ranking board, there was actually people I recognized, probably the most famous being Brian Campbell of Morning Combat over at CBS and several other shows. And there were multiple other people whose names I had.
A lot of media outlets, stuff like that.
You know, in much contrast to the UFC's pool, who at one point was down to 11, I think it's now back up, and it's off of websites I've never even heard of before. And the UFC now intentionally tries to hide who those people are. It used to be fairly public. Now, good luck finding that.
Yeah.
But it seems the MMA media in general has reacted very negatively to this news of Bellator rankings. Especially the guys over at SB Nation, the guys on Bloody Elbow, Jordan Breen, several of these people writing these articles where they're just saying we don't need it. It's a joke. And I don't understand that at all.
It legitimizes.
I don't see an argument in any way, shape, or form that a combat sports organization shouldn't have a ranking system. That's ridiculous. Every combat sport is ranked. Every boxing belt has a ranking system behind it.
every sport, every professional sport has some kind of ranking system.
Some kind of ranking system. But in specifically in combat, a one-on-one combat, to think that you don't need one.
Doesn't make any sense. How do you know what you're doing?
The arguments that I've heard against it have been, well, the UFC's ranking system sucks.
Well, that's the UFC, though. Like, they have a complete different body of, you know, people who are voting on their shit. And, I mean, ultimately, you can't shit on someone else's product based off another person's product. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
What do the UFC's business practices have to do with Bellator's business practices when it comes to ranking fucking fighters?
Yeah, it doesn't.
You telling me Bellator is just supposed to go on just randomly picking who?
For
and the viewing public who is used to seeing fighters with a number after their name is just supposed to be like, I don't know who these guys are fighting, but maybe they're good.
And you know, it kind of builds a following for the fighters as well, because you can be like, well, I'm number four in the world. This guy's number two in the world. We're fighting for a title.
And it builds a bridge for fighters in Bellator to get to a title shot. If you don't have a ranking system, the fucking fighters don't know what to do in order to get to the title shot. Now, as bogus as you might want to say those numbers are, a fighter looks at them and goes, well, I got to beat A, B, and C to get to fucking D.
Yeah. Well, and to be 100% too, it kind of helps Bellator in the fact of, like, people's worth. Like, this is going to kind of sound fucked up for a second, but knowing your worth, like, you know what I mean? Like, Bellator can be like, you're the number four guy in the division. You're getting paid this much. Mm-hmm. Because I hate to say it, but there has been some guys who have come into Bellator, asked for a bunch of money, and Bellator has been willing to give it to them for some kind of big cash grab fight. Like, that's happened in the past with their organization. And I feel like this kind of puts an end to that. You know what I mean? Not totally, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Like, guys like Frank Shamrock and shit like that Ken Shamrock have come into Bellator and, like, had...
Instantly gotten,
mm-hmm. like certain fights that maybe you shouldn't have gotten. You know what I mean? And, so I think it stops that as well. You know what I mean? Guys aren't going to come over from other organizations to expect fucking shit on a silver platter. You know what I mean?
It's ranking systems make perfect sense in any combat sports organization, and it never made sense that Bellator didn't have them.
Period.
Well, right. Because when you can't use your win-loss record to determine where you're at, I mean, because like in football, there's no ranked number one, two, and three, but it's based on your divisional standings. It is. Yeah. They don't put the number there.
Yeah.
But it was not the reception I was expecting when I went to read about the Bellator ranking system.
Yeah, it was weird.
I think it's great. I think it's much needed. We don't need to rehash everything we said last week. This is what the sport at Bellator needed.
Yeah.
It would be nice if we had an international system that could fit everybody into that, but we can't because there's different belts. I mean, it doesn't matter what...
Guys will never fight. There's just situations where there's always going to be like guys who are... There's bias towards, like, they're always going to put UFC guys over Bellator guys.
Well, sure, because they're going to look at their competition as being better. I think it's great. Bellator definitely needed it. It's going to add some clarity to their league going forward, because that's essentially what they
add
are.
Add some stakes as well.
And add some stakes and provide a path for the people in that organization to earn more money and earn more gold belts.
Yeah.
So kudos to them. I'm excited to see how they pour out. Honestly, I think they'll be a bit more legitimate just based on who is
voting.
Here's
my question to you, though. So with this ranking system coming in, do you think this is the death of the tournament system in Bellator?
This might be the last round we see of it.
Think so?
And they might hold them at lower levels between unranked fighters, or maybe not. I don't think it necessarily spells the death of it, because that was the other argument that I heard, was Bellator's using tournaments again, so they don't need rankings. Well, they're not just always going to keep doing it. They don't have a tournament format like they used to. They're just doing tournaments to help add clarity, because the waters are jumbled.
Yeah, true.
But as they're adding rankings, these tournaments are just going to add further clarity to their ranking systems now.
I think this is... I'm going to kind of answer my own question here. I think it also does... It kind of even etches out a path for tournaments in the future as well, where you can go, everybody who's in the top eight is in this tournament.
Do that as well.
And then 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, blah, blah, blah. And then it's not as much of matchmaking as it is, kind of a template of who's in and who's out.
Yeah, I don't see any downside whatsoever to Bellator implementing rankings.
I
see nothing but upside.
Me too.
So, good for them. I think it makes it better. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they roll out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all in all, it's been a decent week of combat sports. And that about rounds out the show.
Yep, I think that does it for today.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you've been smoking some good weed along with us. You can catch our show everywhere you get your podcasts from Spotify to Google Play to Apple Podcasts, everything in between. All the information is located on our website at
SWATMMA.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, support the podcast. Yeah.
See you next week, everybody.
Peace.